Welcome to Encrypted. We will be discussing history, conspiracy theories, UFOs, treasure stories, the paranormal, and other topics of wonder. I'm Lorette Love, and this is my co-host, David Redding.
Hi, today we're going to be talking with Lorette. Hey, Lorette, how are you doing today?
Great. How are you, David?
I'm doing excellent. Lorette is the author of the book Encrypted. Her book can be found at encryptedthebook.com and on Facebook under Encrypted the Book. Now, I'm actually on your website right now, Lorette. I'm actually intrigued. I actually want to read this directly off your website. This is an excerpt off of encryptedthebook.com. When I first deciphered the code, I was mesmerized. As I studied and researched, I found more and more examples of the code spanning throughout the ages. My observations positively terrified me, as there was present in them something mysteriously evil, possibly supernatural, and definitely shocking. Those who know the mystery of the code have included famous writers, artists, scientists, politicians, and clergy. They have hinted at, alluded to, and even gifted us a glimmer of the truth via a thin veil using venues of art, fiction, fairy tale, and myth. Wow, I find that very interesting. So, Lorette, how did you find this code? Are you a cryptologist? Is this your profession?
Oh, no, I'm not a professional code breaker. Actually, several different things led me to break the code. I had an interest in code since I was a teenager. I read all the books on the market, that sort of thing. You know, looked at every show that I could about code breaking, both fiction and, you know, documentary type thing. But I think one thing that was crucial in breaking the code, which is a little bit out of the normal, is that I'm dyslexic, particularly numerically dyslexic. You know, that's where you transpose numbers. I can also do it with, you know, with the alphabet also, with reading, but mostly for me it's numerically challenging. It's very difficult for me to, you know, calculate in my head. I have to write things down, that sort of thing. And it impacts my depth perception, my ability to judge distances. So I think because of that, I look at things a little differently than other people, or I see things a little differently. Not any hocus-pocus strange stuff. You know, it's just that my perception is a little bit different. Another thing that led me to break the code started when I was very young. My first grade teacher was an art enthusiast, and she took us to museums and, you know, gave us appreciation of art, you know, at, what, 5 years old, 6 years old. She had Van Gogh and Picasso and other masters, you know, their paintings up on the classroom wall, so we could walk up and look at them, and I often did. And I would, you know, look at these paintings and see things like little shapes or objects in the painting, like in the sky or what have you. And I was really curious about it. I didn't understand why, you know, why would they put, you know, one eye there, you know, something that looked like an eye, or, you know, a human eye, or a cross or something like that. And it actually does work out in the code. When you break the code, you see why these little objects were placed where they were. So then, when I was much older, in my 20s, I started reading about secret societies like the Templars. In particular, As far as breaking the code is concerned, the concept presented in the Emerald Table of Hermes was really important in breaking the code. You want me to read that verse?
Sure.
Okay. It's that which is below corresponds to that which is above, and that which is above corresponds to that which is below to accomplish the miracle of the one thing. And I think the one thing could mean a few different things. It could be the one thing is breaking the code, the secret in the code, or it could mean something that we could talk about later. But that verse actually gives instructions on how to decrypt the code. And when the method of decryption is implemented on the works or to the works of illuminated artists and writers, that unveils a secret history, they implanted inside the picture is revealed.
So is that where the codes are hidden? Are they hidden actually in the pictures?
Right. They're in paintings, they're in documents, carvings, literature, even fairy tales. And the illustrations in the fairy tales. Charles Perrault's Sleeping Beauty is a prime example. Perrault is said to have been a grandmaster of the Priory of Zion in the 1600s. And the Priory of Zion is a hotly debated subject. A lot of people don't believe in them. They say that it was, a defunct organization, or that it never existed, so that's hot. That's a big controversy, whether the Priory of Zion is real or not. I believe it was. It is. Still is, I believe. And they're attached to the Knights Templar, supposedly, if you believe in the Priory of Zion as being real. So Charles Perrault, was said to have been the Grand Master of the Priory of Zion, like I said, in the 1600s. And if he was, he would have been privy to the code and its true meaning, because the Knights, the Templars, were one of the groups that guarded the code and, the meaning of the code and everything associated with it, actually. And, so the code can be found in the works of many artists, painters, sculptors, the Voynich manuscript, supposedly the most mysterious manuscript in the world, or one of them, that is encoded. The Book of Kells is encoded. The Washington Capitol building, the Statue of Liberty, ancient tablets from Mexico and from ancient Sumeria, and many others. There's so many, many things. It's like a web, and you go from one strand to the next and find new things. That's what happened with me with my research. One of the most important paintings to look at is The Shepherds of Arcadia. There are actually two versions by Nicolas Poussin, and he painted those in the early 1600s.
Wow, that's a lot. So who was involved with encrypting and hiding the code?
Well, I mentioned the Shepherds of Arcadia painting, and I've mentioned a few things. But, of course, Da Vinci. There is a real Da Vinci code. His paintings are highly encrypted. The Mona Lisa is encrypted. There are demons actually in her black dress or cape or whatever she's wearing once it's decrypted. Bats, all kinds of things. Picasso, Thomas Jefferson, Sir Francis Bacon, who actually Thomas Jefferson really admired Sir Francis Bacon, being, he said he was one of the top three geniuses of the world ever, you know, ever. So Sir Francis Bacon was a leading Rosicrucian. Some people think that he wrote Shakespeare, or that he wrote Shakespeare with several of his friends, and also that he was a secret son of Queen Elizabeth. There's that whole theory as well. And in fact, if he wasn't her son, he was at least close to her. He actually asked her to fund the colonies, the American colonies, because he saw America as the true New Atlantis. He wrote a book called New Atlantis, about America. And so then there's Ben Franklin, who of course was a close associate of Thomas Jefferson's. He was deeply steeped in the occult, as many people know. He was a member of the Hellfire Club in England. And then Robert Louis Stevenson. His stories were not really for children. There was a lot of esoteric knowledge embedded in his works. Lewis Carroll, Isaac Newton, J.R. Tolkien, Maxfield Parrish, Bernini, Edgar Allan Poe, Bram Stoker, just so many people, Jules Verne.
Well, you mentioned a lot of names, popular names. How are they all linked or related?
Well, I believe that they were all in esoteric groups. You could say secret societies, whatever word you want to use, probably having overlapping memberships in them. I think Rosicrucianism was a huge factor, possibly Masons, the very, very highest elite. Again, with the Rosicrucians, it would be only the most elite members would know this. I don't think the general population of the groups knew. So I think that's the common denominator, is that they were all in some group or society that perpetuated this.
Okay, so now there's codes hidden throughout all this art and pictures that you're talking about. Once you decode something, what does it show you?
Well, actually, the decodings, like you read from my book, what I wrote, they're pretty amazing things. They're very intricate, and they're taken from various outward bodies, like we talked about, writing, paintings, other art forms. But the decodings are the secret soul, the true essence, hidden in a most cunning presentation. I mean, you know, I was astonished when I first found these things, and they're, oh my gosh, you know, this is amazing. And I did not know what they meant for the longest time. It was a long time before I understood what it meant. But when you first look at a decoding, you'll see an image, you know, it takes a while. You have to, like, look at it for a minute. At first, it looks like nothing. And then once you start looking at it for a while, you'll see an image and then another image, as if they sort of morph from one into another, you know, like one figure's, you know, chin will be the beginning of somebody else's forehead on there, something like that. It's like one object on top of or commingling with another. Then you'll find the images are like a totem pole style. And maybe that's where totem poles originated from. I don't know, because this code is very old. It goes back at least 5,500 years in my book. I mean, actually, I found things since I wrote the book that are older than that. But so I don't know how old totem poles are, but who knows? It may be associated with it or connected somehow. At times, for example, a mouth for one creature will be like the following creature's nose. And the more you look at each decoding, the more you'll see. Like, I was just looking at today at one of the codes, one of the decodings to talk about tonight. And I saw something I hadn't seen before. And I often have friends or colleagues, you know, call me up and say, "Hey, Lorette, did you see this?" You know, and I didn't. I didn't before. So, you know, they're very intricate. That's, to me, the most amazing thing about it, how very laboriously fashioned these were.
That's good. I was actually wanted to mention, as reading your book, you were talking about the decodings. You mentioned in your book that one of your major decodings was that of the famous Kensington runestone. For those of you unfamiliar with it, the Kensington runestone is a 200-pound slab of stone that is covered in runes on one side. It was found by a Swedish immigrant in Minnesota back in 1898. Since then, the stone has been under scrutiny. Many people believe the stone to be a fake. Some people feel it tells a story of early Scandinavians arriving in North America. There's so many different stories that people believe with the stone. You talk about this Kensington stone in your book, and you actually have a picture of it on your website. Tell us, Lorette, what did you find?
Well, okay, yes, on my website, near the bottom of the page, you will find some writing that says, "Look closely. The more you look, the more you see. Like an intricate totem pole, one image blends into the next." This description was found in the famous Kensington stone from Minnesota. Toward the bottom is, okay, a masked man, a snake, or a dragon's face on his chest. Okay, so right below that that writing is one of the descriptions from the runestone. And I guess the easiest way to go about it is I'll just be talking about it from the top. You'll be looking at the center of the picture, and I'll start at the top. How's that?
Yeah, I can see what you're talking about.
Okay, so there's an image at the very top, like of a man. He has a pointed beard, and he has an X on his forehead, in between his eyes, basically. And that is a character that we will talk about later. That X on his forehead is relevant. And it's on a lot of the decryptions that I've done. The second thing, yeah. And then it blends into another face of a man. The beard from the first guy is like becomes a knife or a dagger or something that goes into the head of the next guy, who's, I don't know if you can see it there, but it's there's a white, like, knife or something going through somebody's head, and it's right between his eyes, and his mouth is open, like he's in shock or in pain or something. And right below that, his cheeks become closed eyes of a bat face. That man with his mouth open, his cheeks, which are round, you know, round circles, basically, with dashes at the bottom, those become the eyes of a sleeping bat face.
Wow.
And then, yeah. And then underneath that is like a sort of monster creature. A couple of them, actually. There are several monsters in it, but there's one that has, it's a big head, it's a large head right in the center, and it sort of has these bolts on the side going out on each side, white bolt-type things, sort of like Frankenstein. And that creature has two fangs in the front, and a collar that goes up sort of like Dracula, which is interesting because in many of the decryptions, there is a costume that this vampire-ish character wears that is very similar to Dracula, but these are like 1,000 years before Dracula. So it's very interesting. And then below that is a masked man taking up the last maybe third. One-fourth? Yeah, one-fourth. And he's sort of like flying towards you. His arms are down or to his sides, and he's like flying. And on his chest is some sort of creature. I don't know if it could be, because the arms also could become ears. It looks sort of like a black lamb, or without the arms, or it could be like a snake head or a dragon head or something. So that tells a story right there.
Wow, that's kind of creepy.
It is. And the more you look at it, the more you'll see, like I said.
Well, on this note, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the decoded images and the Holy Grail. You're listening to Encrypted on BBSRadio.com.
Every day, 80 children and adults are diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Know the warning signs. Extreme thirst, frequent urination, sudden weight loss. For more information, go to jdrfbayarea.org. That's jdrfbayarea.org.
Lama Sankey Drugane Drawagi Kangalupa Dei Salagopashu.
As many as 3 million children and adults have type 1 diabetes. Join JDRF and help support the research that is delivering better treatments and ultimately a cure. Go to jdrfbayarea.org.
And we're back. This is Encrypted. I'm David Redding, and I'm talking with Lorette Love, the author of the book entitled Encrypted. Before the break, we were talking about Lorette's website, encryptedthebook.com, and the different decodings. And you mentioned earlier about the different characters and objects that you found in your decodings. What specific meanings do they have? Do they have specific meanings, I should ask?
Yeah, yes. Do you want me to talk about, like, the different objects? There are chalices, swords.
Well, I guess, yes. The chalices are a big thing. Like you mentioned, the Holy Grail is talked about in your book and on your website. Are you saying that the cup or chalice in the decodings are that of the Holy Grail?
Yes, I believe that that's what, you know, the initiates wanted to depict. The elite members of the groups or secret societies, whatever you want to call it, the highest echelon, were passing on a secret history to, you know, initiates in time. And a story about their belief in the Son of, their belief in the Holy Grail and the Son of Lucifer dying and being in death sleep. I don't know if you want to go into that now, but yes, the Holy Grail, I believe, well, they actually write it in various documents that once they're decrypted, they actually state that, you know, they talk about the Holy Grail and what it really is.
And these you're finding on the pictures. You're finding them encoded into these pictures.
Well, almost every picture, not every single one, but almost every one has some sort of chalice in it with either a snake or a bat or a person drinking from it. Let's take the Kensington Stone. When I decoded the Kensington Stone, this picture that's on my website is only one scene that I found. There are many scenes in one object. So this one may or may not have a chalice. I have people, you know, calling me and saying, hey, the chalice is right below that guy's two teeth. It's like a snake head drinking from it. You know, other people say, no, it's not a chalice, but there are clear chalices, especially in a colored painting, you know, paintings. This is a stone, so there's only black, white, and shades of gray. But in paintings such as Shepherds of Arcadia, there is a chalice, a clear chalice. In that painting, it actually, on the bottom of the decryption, it are two snakes holding up a golden goblet. And there is a picture, it's a picture of a figure with blood all over its face, like around its mouth. So the Holy Grail is very definitely a, main fixture in the code.
Okay. And among these things also, amongst these things you're finding, you also talk about shapeshifters. What about the shapeshifters?
Right. Well, the main, I think, character in the whole story is this figure that's a king who shapeshifts. Like this face, the top is a man with the X on his head, which represents an actual person, which we'll talk about a little bit later, I guess. But that person then has a deadly mortal head wound. It's always through the top of his head. And then he morphs into something. In this Kensington Stone, it depicts him turning into a bat, a sleeping bat, like in going into a death sleep. And then it progresses into he becomes like this king-like big figure. And then at the bottom, he's like a superhero with a mask, and he could fly. The shape-shifting is, you know, the heart of really the whole, every code. It's always a man shifting into something else. I think that one really good example also is the ancient Sumerian tablet of Kish.
Kish, you're talking about modern-day Iran right now. Correct?
Right, exactly. And that tablet that I decoded is from 3500 BC. And so that actually shows a wolf man, a wolf face, a man's chest, a little bit of pants or something that he's wearing. But a definite wolf head, and that's 5,500 years old. So whoever they were talking about in that had to have lived, if they're talking about a real person, had to have lived at that time or before, which, you know.
Okay, so
narrowed the field a bit.
Okay, so we were talking about the man morphing into a bat, the man shifting into a wolf. could that have been precursors to, say, like the movie monsters, like Dracula, Batman, Wolfman?
Well, I think so, yeah. In the case of Dracula, at the least, I mean, Bram Stoker was in a secret order during the time he wrote Dracula. Charles Noday, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but he was a Grand Master of the Priory of Zion from 1801 to 1844, and he wrote a vampire story long before Bram Stoker's Dracula, which was written in 1897. So there's this, fascination with vampires and bats and men that turn into bats within the group of Priory of Zion or whatever secret societies these people belong to.
And you're finding these all in these, they're encoded in these pictures. How do you know that these characters aren't just a form of ancient fiction storytelling?
Well, I guess it's possible. The reason I don't believe that is because they're so intricate in design. I mean, why? I don't understand why anyone, not to mention the famous writers and painters who were very busy people and intelligent people, why they would encrypt these things and all of them put forth the same story. I mean, it's not like they're telling different stories. It's always the same story over and over again, just in different venues or adding a little bit of detail or information here or there. Sometimes you find, a little more information from one luminary than another one put in. Or some people were better at doing it than others, I guess you could say also. But I just don't understand. It doesn't make sense to me why they would all take the time to put this secret message in underneath or, concealed inside their work if it wasn't real to them.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, it's confusing to me. I actually was going over your website again here. You have a bunch of questions on the website. One of them stands out for me right here that you have on here. What is the significance of 12-21-12? As far as I knew it, it was just to do with the Mayan calendar. What is there a bigger significance with the 12-21-12?
There is, and actually the Mayan stones and petroglyphs and things like that are also encoded. So, like I said, on every continent that I've looked at, from Japan to, to Mexico to, the European territories, China, every continent has Africa. They all have code, so it's very interesting. Specifically, what was your question?
Oh, I just was reading your question on your website saying, what is the significance?
Oh, the significance, right. The significance,
yeah.
Right. Well, the significance of December 21st, 2012, or 12-21-12, which is like mirror images, is that certain people, such as Thomas Jefferson and Robert Louis Stevenson and other writers, actually encoded that a resurrection would be taking place on that day. They said, resurrect Cain, 12-21-12.
So you're not actually predicting an Armageddon date on this, are you?
No.
Okay.
What they were doing is calling to action people in their group who would be living at that time, which was last year, to try to resurrect this person, Cain, who they believe is their Messiah. I'm not saying I believe in it. I'm just saying that this is what they wrote. They wrote resurrect Cain, you know, on that date. Sometimes they didn't put the date, but I found the date several times. So again, there's a link between the Mayan culture and every other code, that every other piece of writing or painting that is encoded in this way, the way that I'm talking about tonight.
So all the codes are linked in some form or fashion, is what you're saying.
Well, this particular code that I broke, yes. I'm not talking about any other type of code, just the one I broke, right? Exactly.
So
it's a secret history that they're handing down to initiates to get them ready or to call them to action to do this resurrection. And who knows if anybody ever tried to do it last year or not. I don't know or what. But I'm just saying what I found written there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what is actually this secret history that the code is actually hiding? What is it?
Okay. Yeah. Well, the secret history is that Cain, the son of Eve, you know, from the Garden of Eden, the one who killed his brother, Abel, they say in the code, the people who devise code say that Cain is the son of Satan, not Adam. And that Cain acquired a deadly head wound and was put into like a death sleep, like the undead, you know, from Dracula's stories, until the day initiates would resurrect him. And like I said before, even in this Kensington one, you can see there it shows a bat with his eyes closed, and then usually it will have either a man or a bat's eyes open and closing, you know, opened and then closed. Or many times a bat's eyes closed and then opened, and also a man's eyes closed and opened, showing that, you know, he's asleep or dead and then waking up, like a resurrection type thing. Usually it also has a chalice again of that holy grail that they're drinking from that wakes them up. So the secret history goes on to talk about that at some point after the resurrection, he'll become the king of the world. You know, one word for it is the Rex Mundi. Another one is the Antichrist from the book of Revelation, the last book of the Bible. That whole book of the Bible talks about an Antichrist coming. This code also tells that Eve is Isis. Isis is Eve. Cain is Horus. And Satan is Osiris, the Egyptian unholy trinities, so to speak. That's, you know, in a nutshell, that's basically what they're trying to tell people. It took me a while to figure it out because a lot of it I didn't understand until with only pictures. I mean, I was seeing the same thing over and over, and I got, you know, the gist of it. But when I started looking at works of literature, like Robert Louis Stevenson's work, it started, you know, spelling out literally, you know, Cain lives, resurrect Cain, those kind of things. And then later we'll talk about the Declaration of Independence, which said a lot also. So that's basically, in a nutshell, what the history is.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's starting to seem to get really religious-based.
It is, yeah. I think that. Sorry.
I was gonna say is we're Were they all of the same religion? Everybody, you know, involved in this, or how did that work?
You know, I'm guessing they were. I'm guessing that these different groups, even though they were different groups, because remember, we're going back 5,500 years. So these different groups, I guess they did believe in, at least in this one concept, they agreed on. That's all I could say. I have no proof or definitive answer for it. I mean, they all are, like I said, intricately weaving this story into their works. So I don't understand why they would do that if they didn't believe it. And it does match up with the Book of Revelation. The interesting thing is they believe that Lucifer is the good God and Jehovah God, which I believe in, and anybody who's Christian or Jewish believes in Jehovah God as being the good God, where these people believe that Lucifer was the good God. He was the one in the Garden of Eden that wanted to give mankind knowledge and spiritual enlightenment and make them like gods or angels or whatever, higher than mankind, you know.
Wow. We got all this stuff going on. Well, right now, I think this is the perfect time. We're going to take another break. When we come back, we have more on the Antichrist and the Declaration of Independence. You guys don't want to miss this. You're listening to Encrypted on BDSradio.com.
Long before you and I were ever born, a mystery was hidden. A code was devised. A secret was guarded. It is encrypted. The truth about the Holy Grail. Who is 666? What is the elixir of life? What really happened on 12/21/12? What astonishing secret is hidden in the Declaration of Independence? What if everything you learned about history, everything you believed about reality, everything you trusted for your future is a lie? What if the truth is encrypted? EncryptedTheBook.com.
And we're back. This is Encrypted. I'm David Redding, and I'm talking with Lorette Love, the author of the book entitled Encrypted. Before the break, we were talking about the Antichrist. Very interesting. So, Lorette, a question that I have here is, we were talking about the shifters, the Batman, Wolfman. How do you know that these are representing the Antichrist?
Well, like I was saying before, I didn't know until I actually, you know, started looking at writers and actual documents, letters, books, where they actually write, you know, Cain is a vampire bat. You know, Cain is 666. Things like that. So I couldn't, you know that it was Cain. I wondered because there was on many of the pictures, like the one on my site with of the Kensington Stone, that first face on the top with the X on his forehead. Remember I mentioned that?
Yes.
Well, I wondered if that could be the mark of Cain, because Bible story goes, the biblical story goes that God put marked Cain, gave him a mark. And so I wondered if that X was like the mark of Cain. And actually later I'll tell you where I found that answer when we get to that. So, I couldn't tell until I actually saw it in writing. Robert Louis Stevenson wrote it, encrypted it, many other people did. So, yeah, I had to see it in writing before I really knew.
Oh, that's smart. Well, now off those questions, we do have the fun question. Movies have been made about this. Tell us about the code on the most important document in American history, the Declaration of Independence. What made you look at the Declaration in regard to the code?
Well, for one thing, the esoteric nature of Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin made me want to look at it. I had done, like I said, research on secret societies before, and Ben Franklin was, like I said, in the Hellfire Club and had many, many memberships in different occult groups in England, here in America, and in France, which there was a huge occult, group of people in France. And, Thomas Jefferson has that link with France as well. So those things made me want to look at the Declaration of Independence. But admittedly, only after I got the idea from the movie National Treasure is when I really looked at that document. When the movie first came out, I went on the government archives website, but they only had the front of the Declaration online. And I did decode it, but it was difficult to work with. The ink was fading. I saw enough to know that it was encoded, but it was difficult to work with, so it was sort of frustrating. And if you haven't seen National Treasure, if you have, I'll refresh your memory. Do you remember it, David? It's about a secret code being on the back of the Declaration of Independence.
Yes.
It was a fun, great movie. But it made me think, wow, that would be very interesting if there really was something on the back. I mean, it would be, I don't know if the writers knew it or, totally an accidental thing or a coincidence or whatever, but a couple of years later, I forgot about that. I went on to different things I was looking at, and a couple of years later, I went back on that government archives website because I only wanted to look at the original, and I didn't want to look at some fake one that might be on another site. So I looked at it and worked with it, and immediately when I first decoded it, pictures popped up. Of course, they're not in color. It's, they're black and white or goldish and black, type of images. And by the way, the only way that I enhance any of the photographs or the descriptions in my book are I might add a color to it to make it stand out, like I did on this. If you go to my website, up at the top, I'll go there. Up at the top, there is one of the decryptions from the Declaration, the back of the Declaration. And I made it a little bit golder, just so it will pop out more. But I never changed anything else. I might enlarge the whole thing, but I didn't tamper with it any other way. Could you, David? Can you see that?
Oh, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. So, in the middle of it is the most striking to me. It's like a Batman mask, sort of, on a flying person, and he's like flying towards you, looking down. Above that is sort of another face. I really don't know what that is. It's sort of another like monster creature above him. But the main thing I think is this flying Batman type archetype, you know. Anthropomorphic type creatures are really big in this code. And that, you know, that's one of them.
Yeah, I see the picture.
Yeah, so it's amazing that on this, the back of the Declaration of Independence, which, what does it say on the back? The original Declaration of Independence for July 1776?
Yep, the original Declaration of Independence dated 4th July 1776.
Right. So from that, and the supposedly blank, you know, piece of parchment or whatever it was made out of, I heard that somebody told me that it was actually done on a lambskin Masonic apron that was cut out. I don't know if that's true, but somebody told me that, and that's really interesting. But on this supposedly blank, except for one sentence on the bottom, document, this pops up when I decode it. It was just frightening, you know, scary and bizarre and, you know.
So I want to ask this last question before we go. We were talking about all these codes that you're finding scattered throughout history, and, you know, almost like a warning. If it's a warning,
right,
why hide the code?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
I think that they were, number one, they were afraid to let the general public know. I mean, back in many of the times, I mean, just until recent history, where we have the freedom to say our belief systems or our religion or whatever, I mean, people were killed if they didn't go along with the social norms or whatever. That's one reason. And that's why a lot of secret societies, I think, I'm not an expert on it, but why a lot of them even formed was because they needed to talk in secret about their belief systems. Also, I think that they only wanted the initiates of their groups later in history to be privy to this information and to carry out that plan that I told you about, that resurrection plan. Whether you believe that it could be done or not, they believed it, I think. And
wow.
So they didn't want everybody to know. You know, they wanted it to be, you know, just the elite. And that's my take on it, but I'm sure other people have different ideas. And
well, that's excellent. You've given everybody a lot to digest on this hour. And speaking of on this hour, that is the end of this hour. Our next show will be on Wednesday, June 19th, same time. And I got to say, on behalf of Lorette, thank you very much, Lorette.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome. On behalf of Lorette Love, I'm David Redding. We want to thank you for listening to Encrypted. We wish you all a good night.